produced at the studios of KBOO Radio in Portland, Oregon. This is Free Culture Radio. I'm your host, Doug McVeigh. On this edition of Free Culture Radio, Keeping the Faith. I rarely discuss my own faith. Well, here goes. I'm a member of the United Methodist Church, though I haven't attended a service in years. I'm not dogmatic, far from it. Yet all the work that I do, as an activist, as a journalist, for decades, all my work has been informed by my faith. My personal life, on the other hand, I was a hot mess for a long time. Been in recovery for just over 4 years, 4 years and 2 weeks on the day of this recording, and my faith is helping me through that. Now stay calm, dear listener, we're not here to talk about me. However, on this edition of Free Culture Radio, we are going to talk a good bit about faith. Joining me via Zoom is Hill Brown, Southern Director of Faith in Harm Reduction. Hill, welcome.
Welcome. Thank you.
I guess let's start with you. Tell listeners a bit about yourself, how you got into harm reduction, how you got into the ministry.
Yeah. So I am based in Western North Carolina. For many years, I have lived here. I moved to Western North Carolina in 2011. I grew up in Alabama. I felt very committed to work in the South. In 2022, I joined Faith in Harm Reduction. But prior to that, I ran a community-based harm reduction program in Asheville, North Carolina called Steady Collective. Helped consult on some other projects in the region. But prior to all of my harm reduction work, I had lived in Catholic worker houses. I had been training for the ministry. I had been in an apprenticeship for ordained ministry for 2.5 years. And things just kind of emerged, things connected. I did this ministry work, and then I did this harm reduction work, and Faith in Harm Reduction helped combine those two. And so that's kind of how I've ended up here. And I now serve as a chaplain at a place called 12 Baskets Cafe in West Asheville. And I work with folks who are unhoused and folks who are using drugs, folks that live at those intersections. And I also act, as you said, as the Southern Director of Faith and Harm Reduction. So work with programs throughout the South who are ready to make a connection with faith communities, harm reduction programs that are ready to make a connection with faith communities, and faith communities that are ready to work with harm reduction programs, and faith communities who are ready to talk differently about folks who use drugs and the way that we view substance use in our culture.
Tell me about Faith in Harm Reduction. How the organization start? What's it about? What kind of work does it do?
Sure. Yeah, so Faith in Harm Reduction was started by our current executive director, Reverend Erica Paulette, who is an ordained minister in the United Church of Christ. And Erica has been a longtime harm reductionist, very committed to the movement, and is based in New York City, which is where one of our offices is. We're based in New York. And that office is in Judson Memorial Church, which is across from Washington Square Park. And Faith in Harm Reduction up there is doing incredible work. We have many chaplains up there, and of course, Erica's there. We're doing spiritual care at On Point, the overdose prevention centers in New York City, and circle work, grief work in those spaces. And then we do outreach in Washington Square Park, and we have worked with Judson to place a drug checking machine in that church. And so one of the few churches in this country that's doing drug checking, which we believe is life-saving work, is faithful work, is essential. And so that's our organizing up there. Down here, you know, the climate is different. This is what you get when you have drug policy in a country that is just state by state. So syringe access, the history of syringe access is different down here. It was legalized in 2016 in North Carolina. And so we're doing different kinds of work, but we're still providing spiritual care for folks who use drugs. We're still talking about the importance of syringe access and naloxone distribution and drug checking and the 5-point protocol of acupuncture in the ears, which in North Carolina could be a great tool for detox and support for folks who are using drugs, but it's only legal for folks who are licensed acupuncturists and medical providers. So we're trying to move things along so that we can look more like what's happening in New York City at on point in other places like that. So, yeah.
There's so much I want to ask you about, but we only have this half hour. So let's dive in at the deep end. Some
Okay.
people might question the combination of faith and harm reduction. Some
Sure.
people might view them as contradictions. I would argue quite the contrary. But what do you think? Faith and harm reduction, are they in fact complementary?
Yeah, I think they are. I think that the principles of harm reduction that were laid out by the National Harm Reduction Coalition perfectly align with most faith communities' ideas about how to support people non-judgmentally. I think it's a really good pairing. And I think, as a person who comes out of a Christian tradition, I was raised Southern Baptist, not in that tradition anymore, but that is how I was formed. That Christianity really, I think, aligns with those principles. And I think that Christians have a lot of work to do to repair the harm that we've done by setting up these sort of false purity dichotomies between folks who are clean and folks who are dirty. We see the way that religion has done damage to people who use drugs in the very language that we use when we talk about substance use. We say that when folks are not using, that they're clean. And so that automatically implies that people who use drugs are dirty. And that's repair work that Christians need to do. And I think that any person of faith that's working in opposition to a war, should be looking at the war on people who use drugs as part of that. I think that any faith community that's working on reparations and on racial reconciliation needs to be looking at the war on drugs, since we know that it's racist. Folks who are working on economics and class, the issue's right there. I think that substance use is at the center of so many conversations we could be having in faith communities, but we're skirting it and we're not talking about it because it makes us uncomfortable. And I tend to think that our obsession with purity and folks being sober doesn't really have much to do with many faiths, but has a lot to do with white supremacy.
Except that people might be backsliding or that might not have it perfect, and we hope that they will eventually get things right. We don't expect that people have to be absolutely pure and perfect just to walk in the door of a church. I was born and raised in rural Iowa. The Methodist Church, as I mentioned, which I mentioned at the beginning, is my grandmother's and great-grandmother's home church, and it's one of those things when you're brought up in that. It's just you're brought up in and around that. I don't know what it would if I. Forgive the stereotype, but down south where you were born and raised, I would imagine it's also sort of woven so deeply into the culture that it's just there. The
Right.
religion, not so maybe not the particular denomination, but the basic faith is just
Right.
part of it. It's just faith and harm reduction does a lot of great work. You also work in partnership with other organizations. Tell me about some of that.
Yeah, so we work really closely with a lot of national harm reduction organizations. That includes that we provide spiritual care at many conferences that are held by national harm reduction organizations like the Drug Policy Alliance. We will be at the Reform Conference that's coming up in Detroit. And we typically go to national conferences like that and create ritual space, create space for folks to be part of grief circles or to receive spiritual care if they need that during the conference. So we partner with organizations like that. And then on local levels, we partner with groups like Bronx Mobile or with On Point in New York City. Down here, most of our partnerships are with churches to try to get support and change the conversation. And so those things are happening. And then in our newsletter, we point people in the direction of organizations that we feel aligned with that we want them to support. And recently, Black and Pink was one of those groups. As you know, harm reduction is an abolitionist movement. We don't really need harm reduction if we don't have the war on people who use drugs. That's why this work is so important. And so we want to support folks who are incarcerated for crimes related to substance use, and especially queer folks, because queer folks are a big part of our history and part of our founding in the harm reduction movement. So we have lots of partnerships like that. And then we have denominational partnerships like the United Church of Christ, which does have a harm reduction and overdose prevention division. And Erica also works for them in that department. And I did for a while also. So those denominational partnerships are great. And we hope to move denominations to adopt policy and to develop departments like that so that they can push local congregations to think more deeply about these issues, and we can provide them resources to do that.
I want to ask you about sanctuary. It's a term that people may be familiar with in the context of immigration and the protection of people seeking asylum. It's actually a term with a very long history in the church. Talk to me about sanctuary.
I mean, this is a conversation we're having a lot internally right now. I think the conversation around sanctuary needs to expand. What churches are going to provide, who they're going to provide it to. It feels like a hard moment, but also a moment filled with a lot of opportunity, particularly Christian spaces. You know, we have seen decline in church membership and baptism rates. And so we've got these big spaces that aren't being utilized in the ways they once were. And we've got a lot of folks in need of sanctuary, of a place that's safe, of a place that can provide them with the supports that they need. And so New York City, you know, we've kind of created a hub in Judson where there are lots of different kinds of supports for people who use drugs. And I should say here also, the harm reduction movement has also always been a space for trans folks who need injecting equipment that may be hard to access in their local context. And so when we talk about sanctuary for people who use drugs, we're also talking about folks who are injecting hormones, and trans folks who are also experiencing really high levels of persecution right now. And I think when I reflect back on, I had to read Project 2025 for this thing I was doing for a denominational body. And the very first page, it lists three sort of crisis points perceived by the authors of Project 2025, and that's inflation or the economy, substance use, and the visibility of queer and trans people. And substance use is the only topic that gets a second mention on that first page. And we are now seeing, you know, just today, there's conversation about this bombing boats off the coast of Venezuela, who, you know, there's drug traffickers present in those boats, could have set off an entire war, another war besides the war on people who use drugs. This focus on eliminating people who use drugs and people who sell drugs is really terrifying. And it's not just going to be this global focus that, in and of itself, is very terrifying. We know that we've exported the war on people who use drugs to all kinds of countries that weren't very interested in this, but we forced it. And it's also going to continue to be a local issue. The escalation of the war on people who use drugs is going to continue to escalate. And it is time for churches to step in and figure out what to do there. And maybe that means that they join, you know, the Alliance. We have a tab on faithandharmreduction.org's website where folks can go to what's called the Alliance and they can register their faith community. And we are a multi-faith organization, so this includes people of all faiths, register their faith community to be seen as a harm reduction friendly, drug user friendly space where people feel welcomed, and it gives people a way to receive that designation that they've done certain kinds of studies, they made certain kinds of commitments, they've done naloxone trainings. So we want to encourage faith communities to take those initial steps, but also to really be in discernment with their community about how do we support people who are going to experience higher levels of incarceration and persecution by the police and the federal government, just around the fact that they're using drugs.
This is my conversation with Hill Brown, their Southern Director of Faith in Harm Reduction. We'll hear more in a moment. You're listening to Free Culture Radio. I'm your host, Doug McVeigh. Welcome back. Now, let's hear more of my conversation with Hill Brown, Southern Director of Faith in Harm Reduction. A quick aside here, I want to give a shout out to my friends at the St. Anne's Corner of Harm Reduction in the Bronx, a longstanding harm reduction syringe services program there. I got this great t-shirt from them a while back, and it reads, "Lead with empathy, practice mercy, provide safety." That's such a beautiful message.
Yes.
Now, harm reduction has been under attack lately, which is appalling. And it's not only the programs being defunded, but the very concept of harm reduction and radical empathy that's under attack. What can we do?
Yes, this conversation about the attack on harm reduction is really painful because we know that harm reduction is not only evidence-based. We have decades of evidence that shows that harm reduction saves lives, that harm reduction reduces the spread of disease, that harm reduction restores dignity to people who have had that stripped from them. But it's just, there's a way that we kind of saw it coming. The term harm reduction has been a little watered down. We've seen programs throughout the US, primarily abstinence-based and recovery programs, try to adopt this language because for a while we actually saw more funding going into harm reduction. So people were trying to get a hold of this title so that they could get funds. And it was discouraging for people who are really committed to the movement and really committed to the principles and had been around for a long time to sort of watch this watering down. The organizations that weren't explicitly pro-Black, that weren't explicitly abolitionist or pro-queer, we were watching them kind of take it. And now we've got this total backlash where, one, those organizations are stepping away because the money's disappearing. And then harm reduction programs that have been committed the whole time, who are really committed to the principles and the language, really asking questions like, can we continue to use this language? Or has harm reduction become such a problem, so controversial again, that we need to step away from it? Now, at Faith and Harm Reduction, this isn't really a question because it's in our name. So we would have to change our whole name, which we're not going to do. We are going to continue to be Faith and Harm Reduction. And we really believe in the principles and always have. And we really believe in the elders that were part of this movement. And we are in deep gratitude for their sacrifices to do this work. And so we're not going to step away from it. And I think our conversation has been, if we lose money because of that commitment, then so be it. But we have to continue to show up for people who use drugs in a way that feels consistent and feels in alignment with where we've been and what we know is right. And part of this attack, the origin point in this current moment, is obviously this focus on there's no excuse for substance use. You just need to clean up your act. You just need to go to some abstinence-based treatment, which we know is, it's not evidence-based. And we have the data that says that people who don't go to treatment are actually safer than people who go to treatment where there's no medication for opioid use disorder offered. We now have the evidence that supporting MOUD and supporting harm reduction, really is life-saving. But we've got SAMHSA and the CDC in the United States now saying, actually, harm reduction is not evidence-based. And we're pulling back from this really time-tested intervention. And that's really hard because those organizations, one, should provide leadership, and two, have provided funding for a lot of organizations in the United States who have been committed to this work for a long time. And I know that there are people at SAMHSA and CDC who are also, in a lot of pain for this being adopted as sort of their new stance. And within those SAMHSA guidelines, we also see massive attacks on gender non-conforming folks, on trans folks, on the way that those folks should have access to hormones. So it's just heartbreaking. But your question was, what do we do? And I think the answer is that we do stay committed to where we have been. We do stay committed to the movement. We look to our elders who are living and also the written work of our elders who have passed on. And we get together in community as harm reductionists. Over time, there have been fewer and fewer regional harm reduction conferences, and we don't get together in the way that we did, a decade ago. I entered the harm reduction movement about a decade ago. I'm one of the younger folks around, really. And I think we gotta have that back. we've got to have that time together back to support one another as we navigate fascism. We really need community, and we really need the legacy of the folks who've come before.
I went to my first harm reduction, National Harm Reduction Conference back in 2012. It was right here in Portland. I mean, it was right here, and that was a wonderful experience. It was such an odd time too. It was an odd time. This was the for years they had had the feds had had a sort of. Harm reduction was taboo. It was anathema. They if you used the phrase harm reduction, you were sure to see your grant proposal rejected. Your research wasn't going to get published. It was just taboo. And in those years, back in the Obama administration, so many things they may have gotten wrong, but by gosh, healthcare and in public health, they managed to make a couple of good ones, and they started to embrace harm reduction and at least allow people to use the phrase without having to fear that they were going to get their grant rejected or their research wouldn't be published. I was talking to a researcher, Don Desjarlais, at one point about the difference in being able to just use those words, and it was really quite profound. And of course, now we're back to the bad old days. Just say no,
That's right.
There was no question in there. In fact, the next question I have is, what question have I not yet asked that I should have?
Well, I think there are a lot of questions about the future, and I don't, I think day to day, we're all wondering what comes next. How do we best protect the folks that we work with? How do we best mobilize faith communities and folks adjacent to that for this work? And I don't think I have the answers to that yet. But I know that the harm reduction movement is full of people who have seen the power of this work. And I hope that more and more faith communities and people of faith can see the power of this, and join in the struggle to protect the movement, and to protect the people who need that protection in this hour, People who have been victimized by the war on people who use drugs have just sort of been left at every turn. We have acted like criminalization because of substance use is like fine and legitimate. And prohibition kills people. And we have seen that in the overdose crisis in really, explicit ways. I mean, even the fact that it's really common language now for people to say overdose crisis instead of opioid crisis. We've watched that switch. And who helped make that switch? It was harm reductionist. Who made naloxone widely available for the public? It was not public health. It was Dan Big. It was a harm reductionist. Harm reductionists are teaching the culture how to show up, in my mind, the way Jesus calls us to show up, which is full of compassion, to meet people where they are, to be present to them, to not attempt to try to get people to do something, but to just say, this is about accompaniment, and I'm going to be present to you. And I'm siding with you because the culture is focused so much violence towards you. And we know in the Christian tradition that God sides with folks who are being maligned by the culture. And drug users certainly are right now. And so I just hope that folks can hear that message and understand that this is their work, that people of faith really need in this moment to support people who are being impacted by this. And I hope that they will, because it's an honor to serve people who use drugs, and it's an honor to be part of this accompaniment work, and it's radical work, and it should be.
How can people keep up with and support the work that you're doing? Websites, social media, that kind of thing.
So faithandharmreduction.org is our website. So you can go there, and we have our old newsletters posted there. We have resources posted there. We have several guides. So if folks are working in a faith community, they're faith leaders, and they need a guide to help kind of mobilize people in their congregation to think about this or to talk about it or even to preach about it. We have sample sermons online. Then I encourage folks to go pick out some of those resources, and that's all there. And then our social media, particularly on Instagram, is updated really regularly. So to go there also, Faith and Harm Reduction on Instagram, and check us out there.
And you have any closing thoughts for the listener?
My closing thoughts for the listener would just be, maybe as a practice today, to go back and read the Principles of Harm Reduction. I think this is good for people within the movement and without outside of it to do this. They're really powerful. They remain really powerful as a guide. They're just full of goodness and humanity. And so I would encourage folks to go back to those today and just spend a little time reading them and thinking on them. And yeah, this is a hard moment. And it's also a moment where we get to show up for our community and show what our values are and what a blessing that is.
Bill Brown, thank you so much.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
That was my conversation with Hill Brown, Southern Director of Faith in Harm Reduction. Find them on the web at faithinharmreduction.org. And for now, that's it. You've been listening to Free Culture Radio. I've been your host, Doug McVeigh. I thank my guest, Hill Brown. Many thanks to everyone out there fighting for civil rights, human rights, and social justice. And thanks especially to you, dear listener, for your support. You make it all worth it, and you make it all possible. Free Culture Radio is a volunteer production for Community Radio and syndicated via the Pacifica Foundation Radio Network's AudioPort service. Please support your local community radio station. Become a member. Become a volunteer. Free Culture Radio is available as a podcast or direct download. Links are at the website kboo.fm/freeculture, along with an archive of past shows. Theme music for Free Culture Radio is composed and performed by Tom Nickel in Four Dimensional Nightmare and is used with permission of the artist. We'll be back in a month to continue our examination of drugs, drug cultures, and the influence of drugs on society. Thanks again for listening. This is Doug McVeigh saying so long. So long!